from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new report by the advocacy group Disability Rights California says that Sonoma County's main jail is not providing adequate care for inmates with mental health disabilities. The report, which is based on a 2015 inspection, found that many prisoners are isolated for more than 23 hours a day and in some cases are inappropriately medicated against their will. County officials say they are doing all they can to address the burgeoning population of mentally ill inmates and point to a dramatic increase in spending for mental health treatment. This forum segment, we discuss the report. Let me tell you who is joining us for that discussion. Ann Hedreas is here with us in studio. She is an attorney with the Disability Rights California, which released the report yesterday, finding again that the Sonoma County Jail neglects inmates with disabilities. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me here.
Glad to have you with us. We also have Randall Walker with us. Randall Walker is Assistant Sheriff of Sonoma County Sheriff's Office. Welcome, Randall Walker.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Michael Kennedy, who also joins us by phone this morning, Behavioral Health Director with the Sonoma County Department of Health Services. And welcome, Michael Kennedy.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. And Ann Hedreas, I'm going to begin with you. I should begin also by saying that this is a very disturbing report, a pattern of inadequate mental health care in the jail. But what we ought to get out here right away, especially since we have a lot of national listeners, is this has been pretty much designated a national trend of taking like conventional facilities and those becoming de facto treatment centers for mental disorders, taking that as incarcerated facilities. And the 2010 study, which I indicated before, has more mentally ill people in jail and in prisons in California than in hospitals. It's like we're back in the 19th century.
Well, the problem is that during the deinstitutionalization trend, it was supposed to have two parts. One was the closing of the long-term locked facility beds, and the second was the increase in community-based facilities, voluntary treatment within the community, not isolated or institutionalized. And what we got was the first part, closing of many of the beds, but we didn't get the second part. And so because there is a dearth of services for people within the community, the criminal justice system has become a default for many people.
Lack of hospital beds is really, you know, at the core of this, I realize. But many people are being held in isolation, as I said earlier, and there's a good deal of violation of the law, really, that you discovered in this report. Routine and voluntary, and I mentioned involuntary in italics, drug injections.
That's correct. We did find on two different bases of which the law was not being followed. One, that individuals who had not been found to be gravely disabled, which is the standard, one of the standards in order to be involuntarily treated, were being given medication involuntarily. And the second problem was that they were being given long-term what are called deconinate injections, which can last between 2 and 4 weeks and can continue beyond the time of their involuntary treatment and beyond the time they might be able to appeal that decision.
This was, if I may say so, a disturbing report. A lot of the emphasis was on focus was on an unidentified woman, even in details about her not having access to water and having to take water out of the toilet and all of this sort of thing. But the report says, quite frankly, I mean, this is just one human being, but there are a number. She should have been in another facility, shouldn't have been in the prison, the jail.
I'm not a mental health professional. I can't make that determination. But they did find that she met the standard for involuntary medication. And what we have is a kind of a rights versus duty system. If you're going to take away someone's right to be able to refuse medication, you have to provide them the appropriate treatment. And by not putting her in a psychiatric facility, they were unable to do that.
Ann Hedreas is here with us in studio. She's an attorney with the Disability Rights California, which released a report just yesterday finding that Sonoma County Jail neglects inmates with disabilities. Michael Kennedy is Behavioral Health Director, Sonoma County Department of Health Services. I guess in some instances we're talking, Michael Kennedy, about the difficulty of determining, you know, what's that catch-all phrase, mentally ill. How we determine that, because it's a pretty big continuum.
Yeah, Michael, first of all, I just wanted to backtrack a little bit. I know there's this, a lot of times on the criminal justice side, we talk about that the jails have become the de facto treatment centers, but I just want to kind of, I'm getting an echo.
Well, we'll see what we can do. Let me put you on hold here, and we'll go to Randall Walker, who, again, is Assistant Sheriff of Sonoma County Sheriff's Department. And there's been a lot of talk out of your department, Sheriff Walker, and others about attempts to remedy the situation, particularly with respect to 5150s, the hold, the psychiatric 72-hour hold. What's being done?
Well, Michael, I'll backtrack a bit, and I'll just say for the Sheriff's Office and for the county in general, you know, we've tried a kind of multi-pronged approach. We've invested in our facilities, several million dollars in trying to modify the jail so that we could meet the needs of our protected populations. And the county's done a lot of upstream investments as well. We have CIT training, critical incident training, that we've trained over 400 of the local law enforcement officers in crisis intervention. We also have a mobile support team that is out there 7 days a week to respond with law enforcement to the community to hopefully prevent people from coming into custody. And when they do come into custody, we have a FACT team, which is a forensic assertive community treatment team, that works with the courts to try to get people into outpatient treatment versus the custodial environment.
You actually you're talking about revenue spent a couple million dollars, taxpayer dollars, modifying the building to adjust to a new wave of people coming in. But this population continues to increase, doesn't it?
It does continue to increase, and it's not the only protected population that we have to look out for and make modifications for, but it definitely has increased more than any one individual group, and we have done much to adjust to that, not just with building modifications, but our staffing, our mental health staffing is higher than in most places, which we had National Institute of Corrections inspected us not that long before the Prison Law Office and DRC came in, and they acknowledged that our staff is higher than in most facilities. And I think the DRC and PLO even acknowledged that, too, when we debriefed with them. We do a lot of great things here, but it is a daunting task.
I'm sure it is, but you have all these people isolated, you know, these. How many do you know how many are severely mentally ill?
Well, as far as the severely mentally ill, we have 53 people. Those who are receiving consistent treatment through our mental health staff, there's 159. And as far as individuals who are taking some sort of psychotropic, which can be anything from Benadryl to an antidepressant, is about 400 inmates in custody. So as you can imagine, custodial environments are full of anxiety. Depression can run rampant in the jail environment with the stress that people are under as they go through their trial processes. So it's not just people that have had a lifelong diagnosis, but people who are in temporary situations that we're trying to accommodate and deal with while they're in custody.
Again, Randall Walker is Assistant Sheriff of Sonoma County Sheriff's Office. And let me go back to Michael Kennedy and hope we don't have an echo here. Michael Kennedy, again, we're talking about a whole range of what is often put under the umbrella of mental illness, even anxieties and depression, which sometimes don't necessarily fall under that umbrella. Right. But you were starting to talk about this de facto language, which you seem to have some concern about. Are you hearing an echo still?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so you know, when we look at the amount of folks that we have contact with in the community, we serve about 9,000 individuals. We have in care about 3,000 individuals. And so when you look at most of those folks with mental illness, they don't even touch the criminal justice system. And as Randall said, we're out in the field. We work with the homeless providers. We're out with law enforcement. We divert people as much as we can, and we try to keep them in the treatment system. And we've been doing a really good job of that. And one of the things I think Randall spoke to is when we look at those folks that have serious mental illness, at any given time we have 5 to 10 people who are refusing meds. So that's the group that we are talking about. The one thing that frustrates me as being I'm on the community side and the correctional side because my staff work at the jail is when people make the recommendations that individuals should be going to inpatient units. I can't get community people in inpatient units. In California, since 1995, 32% of psychiatric beds are gone. They've been closing units. And when we look at the percentage of the population since 95, it's 20% increase in California. California has the worst distribution of psychiatric beds in the country. So there's a huge problem there. If I can't get community people into a psychiatric hospital, we're not going to be able to get inmates. When we try to get inmates in, psychiatric hospitals just flatly refuse to take them.
Let me cut to the chase here, though. I mean, how much are we isolating mentally ill people, do you think, just warehousing them, and particularly in light of these 5150s that tend to operate pretty quickly?
You mean in general?
Yes.
I think we're doing we have a lot of options that are we have a brand new crisis stabilization unit, which is a 23-hour unit where we can bring people in and stabilize them. And then we have home-like crisis residential homes that are run by actually Progress Foundation from San Francisco. And we're just about to open a new peer-run house. So we have a lot of options for people to keep them in the community and help stabilize them. So we need way more. We need way more, and we need more hospital beds. But I think, we need to make mental health a priority. And as far as jail services, San Francisco has a good model because they have a 10-bed forensic unit at San Francisco General Hospital. And that's what we need. We need specialized forensic units in hospitals outside of the jails for folks.
Let me go back, if I may. Well, first let me give out the phone number, because I know there are many of you who want to weigh in on this. It's we're talking about disability rights advocates, exposure of poor conditions and neglect in the Sonoma County Jail, but it raises questions much broader and beyond Sonoma. As I said, this is certainly something that has taken us to a national level of concern and ought to take us to a national level of concern. But if you'd like to join the program, let me tell you how you can do that. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, and you can call us now. You can also email us, our email address, forum@kqed.org, and you can join the program by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on this segment. We're putting up a link to this story on our website, but we do indeed want to hear from you, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. If you have something you'd like to say or ask, again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. And let me go back to Ann Andreas, who, again, is the attorney with the Disability Rights California. There's kind of a broader question here about supporting, the mentally ill post-deinstitutionalization. Give us a perspective on that, if you could, Ann.
Sure. As I was saying before, part of the problem is the lack of community services that are not in a custodial environment. And what we've seen, this project is part of a larger jail project that has looked at 6 different jail systems. And so what we've seen has been consistent across the board. Sonoma County actually has done, as they said, a fairly good job on some points. But the problem of people ending up in overly restrictive criminal justice situations comes up frequently. And it's not just in the criminal justice system. It's also in people being pushed into higher level acute beds. the need for more crisis residential services, the need for more crisis treatment services, short-term voluntary options has not, excuse me, is not followed through.
Isn't there a mental health facility at the jail now that's being built, a multimillion-dollar facility? I mean, you know, the officials are saying that that's one way of moving forward in a big way.
It is one way, and that may be, we have yet to see how that's going to play out. However, it is our opinion that jails are not therapeutic environments by default. And so for people with serious mental illness, working to get more of them out into actual mental health facilities as opposed to criminal justice mental health facilities is the goal.
Also, jails are not, I think, Sheriff Walker, it's safe to say, isolated or shouldn't be isolated facilities. They're, in fact, often touted as being social, where people can interact as opposed to being put like Pelican Bay by themselves for long periods of time.
Right. And if I may say, Michael, the vast majority of our mental health population or population in general are in social settings. And we're one of the few facilities in the state that has programming specifically for that population to not just deal with the mental illness side, but also with the addiction side. So we do program, and we program more than most. And I do want to say about the conditions, because I think it's been said a few times about poor conditions. And I believe Ann will support me on this. Our facility is one of the cleanest, safest, most orderly places that you can go into. And we have an excellent safety rate, not just for the staff here, but for also the inmates who are here. And the issues in the report about the young woman who was drinking out of the toilet, she always had access to water. She was under medical evaluation during the time when she was splashing water out of the toilet. And our clinicians here determined that they could help her in this environment. And I'll say, and Mike will support me, is that the jail is not the optimal environment for mental illness or any illness.
I think most of us would agree with that.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's an inappropriate environment.
Yeah, and Michael, could I just speak to the community piece of this, too?
This is Michael Kennedy. Go ahead.
This is Mike Kennedy. Yeah, we have a mental health court. We try to move people. We divert people. We have now a pretrial program where we try to divert people. But there are certain individuals that have really serious felony crimes that are sometimes waiting to go to the state hospital, which now can be a wait of 6 to 8 months. And we cannot move some individuals into the crisis stabilization unit where I have adolescents, older adults. I mean, so this idea that the community mental health system can pick up some of these folks is ridiculous. So there needs to be state and federal partnership in for some of these individuals. And as I said, we can't get anybody into state hospital settings, which would be a better setting than the jail.
Yeah, I want to bring our callers into this and remind you Michael Kennedy's behavioral health director with the Sonoma County Department of Health Services. And let's go first to Vincent, the caller from San Mateo. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Excuse me, I'm a little nervous, but I've been through the 72-hour hold in California, and I just wanted to point out that the medical industry, I guess I'll call them, they hold a lot of power over the patients, and so when you enter these facilities, you have to sign these papers, and I think that a lot of the, medical techniques are very outdated. So I just think that people should be kind of aware that these people also have rights when they enter these facilities, that sometimes it should be modernized in a sense. People should care for them a little bit more some techniques that might be 30, 40, 50 years old.
Yeah, Vincent, I thank you for that call and appreciate hearing from you. Let me get another caller on real quickly here. L.E. joins us from Richmond. Good morning.
Good morning. I worked in a Northern California counties in what's called the conditional release program, which had to do with incompetent extent trial, not guilty by reason of insanity, et cetera. And as I see it, the issue is really a statewide issue, that there isn't statewide funding to substitute for the closed and closing state hospitals for the criminally insane, if I use that term loosely, and for others who need the mental health treatment. They're just, it's not a county issue, and really to focus on Sonoma County is to miss the fact that it's really a statewide issue, and all the state counties need more funding and a coordinated program.
Ellie, thank you for that. Let me go to Ann on that. Ann Hendricks, he's right. It is a statewide problem.
Absolutely, and that's why I was pointing out that this is a consistent problem that we've seen across counties. It happens to be that our report on Sonoma County came out yesterday, but the issue of inappropriate or inadequate mental health treatment and of excessive use of isolation in jail facilities has been true in all the jails we've seen across the state, and the issue of insufficient community resources is true across the state.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Ann Hedreas and also Michael Kennedy and Randall Walker. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me get Tom on next. Tom, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, this is Tom. I'm a psychiatrist working in Alameda County now, in mostly private practice. I have been working in psychiatry for 49 years in San Francisco and in Alameda County. I've been in jails all over the Bay Area. The problem is, as so, you know, well described by all of the participants, we don't have enough mental health treatment facilities in the community. And it's not just public agencies. In fact, I think primarily private healthcare agencies who have systematically closed down psychiatric units in San Francisco. For example, St. Luke's Hospital no longer has a psychiatric unit. In Alameda County, units have been closed. For example, Eden Hospital no longer has a psychiatric unit. This has been replicated all over the place, and I see it as the fault of the profit incentive private organizations that have to do.
I'm sorry that we seem to have lost that call, but let me go to Michael Kennedy on this, because money keeps coming up here, and I'm looking, Michael, at a comment or a question that a listener poses on our website and says, if all this costs money, who is ultimately responsible? The governor, the state, the board of state and community corrections? Can you address that?
Yeah, I would say it's, again, we're talking about a huge issue that the healthcare systems are responsible for this. We've seen hospitals close their units because it's not financially viable. I don't know if we'd be closing units if people have cancer and it's not viable. It has to do with stigma, and it has to do with, you know, we've got to hold all our health plans accountable too for mental health services, right? And there's not enough resources going to both the community and to corrections for these clients.
Let me go back to Randall Walker with a question from a listener for you, Sheriff Walker, who asks, why did Walker refer to Benadryl as a psychotropic drug?
Well, when we list all the different altering medications, it's one that is tracked by our behavioral health team oftentimes if it's for sleep or other issues. So Mike can speak better to the medication formulary than I can.
All right. Well, is it a psychotropic drug, Michael Kennedy?
It's a drug that we use to help with anxiety and depression, as folks know. And so when we're talking about the 400 clients that we have some contact with, many of those are are related to depression and anxiety.
Let me bring some more callers on. Joe, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Morning.
Good morning. In the diversion of patients or disorderly people, you know, or out of the criminal justice system into the mental health system, a lot of times that means if they go to a, if they are remain uncontrollable or whatever and end up in a state hospital over, then, hey, there's no time limit on that. And the reviews are possibly and actually sporadic, and the help is not there, the support is not there.
I thank you for that comment. I think as a general comment, that holds up, Ann Hayden. So.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that there are reviews, and the timing of those depends on the reason that you end up in state hospital. But many of them are reviews. The status can be renewed infinitely, depending on what type it is. The idea of a state hospital is not to be a short-term hospitalization.
Let me thank a caller, Joe, and go right to another caller, and that's Brian. Brian, you're on. Morning. Brian, are you there?
Good. Yes, I am.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. You're on the air.
Hi. My husband is incarcerated at the Sonoma County, North County Detention Facility. And first, I just wanted to thank the reception staff, actually, for being actually really helpful and really supportive of me and his mother. And they did a really good job. Second, he has mental illness and drug addiction. He's actually going to be transferred to a rehab facility in Clear Lake. But I'm having trouble knowing how to support him on the outside, and his mother is as well. And I just was wondering if you guys had any suggestions.
Let me go to Randall Walker if he can give you a response, and thank you for the call. Randall Walker.
Brian, thank you for the call and acknowledging our reception staff. The best way to support people in custody is making yourself available for the phone calls, actually calling in and talking to our staff to find out what programs they're involved in so you can support them as they go through those programs.
And good luck to Brian. And let me thank Randall Walker and Hadreus and Michael Kennedy. And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And we're coming up on another hour of Forum. We're going to talk about a tough subject in the hour ahead, suicide. But what about those left behind, the loved ones, and the whole grieving and bereavement? Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.